From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Happy Easter to those of you who celebrate it. An emerging artist for the first couple hours of bumper music tonight, then later on tonight, Ancient Beliefs. Here's what's happening. Well, this is how bad the water shortage situation in California is getting. Governor Jerry Brown said Californians will face heavy fines for taking long showers. He said this executive order is done under emergency power. It has the force of law, very unusual, and it's requiring action and changes in behavior from the Oregon border all the way through to the Mexican border. It affects lawns, how people live, how long they stay in the shower, how businesses use the water. People can be fined $500 a day. Well, the world's biggest particle accelerator is back in action after a two-year shutdown and upgrade, embarking on a new mission that scientists hope could give them a look into the unseen dark universe. Scientists at CERN shot two particle beams through the Large Hadron Collider's 16.8-mile tunnel beneath the Swiss-French border near Geneva. The collider was instrumental in the discovery of the Higgs boson, the God particle. That's a subatomic particle that had long been theorized but never confirmed until 2013. Scientists are promising nearly twice the energy and more violent particle crashes this time around. They hope to see all sorts of new physics, including a first-ever glimpse of dark matter. A dirty bomb will be located in Richmond, California on Saturday, April 11, and more than 200 soldiers, airmen, local law enforcement, and firefighting personnel will descend upon the city to defuse the situation. It's all part of an emergency response exercise. Just an exercise. But remember, a lot of strange things have happened during exercises. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu urging the United States to seek a better deal to curb Iran's nuclear program, and said that he would press American lawmakers not to give Iran a free path to the bomb. President Barack Obama, hoping to sway skeptics at home and abroad to get behind the framework agreement struck on Thursday between the world powers and Iran, defended the deal as the best hope to prevent Tehran from acquiring a weapon. Jerry Corsi, author of Atomic Iran. Jerry, this is a serious situation. But it seems as if there's a huge difference between what Netanyahu wants and what President Obama wants.
Well, and also, George, between what the two sides are saying about the agreement that was reached last week. I mean, if you listen to Iran is saying there's no current restrictions on their nuclear program, but yet sanctions will be quickly lifted. If you listen to President Obama, it sounds like there's restrictions that are going to be placed almost immediately upon Iran's nuclear program. I mean, my reading of the agreement is that Iran agreed to agree in the next 3 months, by the end of June, and that it does not look like most of the restrictions in the framework agreement will go into effect until the final agreement is reached. But yet it does look like some of the sanctions will start coming off almost immediately.
There are some who say, hey, Iran is going to act in good faith. There are others who say, don't trust them. Where do you stand?
Well, the history is that Iran has lied about its nuclear program. I attended a briefing in Washington about a month ago of a new site near Tehran that has been revealed by one of the opposition groups within Iran that was, again, another secret nuclear weapons facility. And it's the history of Iran not cooperating with international inspections, and then these surprise sites that were secret nuclear weapons sites in Iran being revealed by opposition groups, that's led to suspicion internationally of whether Iran can be trusted.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much. Jerry Corsi, and you have a great what's left of Easter. Somalia's al-Qaeda-linked Shabab Islamists threatening Kenyan citizens with another bloodbath. The 2 days after their gunmen slaughtered 148 people at a university. And look all around you. The world is changing in all kinds of ways, but are you ready to adapt? It's time to check in with Howard Bloom and get his take on all of this. Howard, can't people adapt to all these things that are going on?
We've been doing it for 2 million years, since we became proto-humans. Our gift is that we are doom riders, catastrophe tamers. We are harnessers of disaster. Look at the things that we have tamed in the last 2 million years. Ice ages, climate change on a massive scale, global warmings, all of those things during a period of 2 million years of ice age. We developed our current modern brains. We became intelligent. We became modern humans. We've harnessed the winds, the seas, explosions, nuclear fission, summer, fall, winter, and spring. Those are massive climate changes, George. And we've even overcome our nakedness. We are one of the very few mammals born on this planet without a thermoregulatory system, without a fur coat, without the apparatus it takes to enjoy a 110-degree summer and to enjoy with equal ease minus 5 degrees with 3 to 4 feet of snow outside. You can throw your kitty cat outdoors on a 105-degree day, and the cat will be perfectly happy. Throw it outdoors when there are 3 feet of snow, the cat is equally happy. We are born without all of that, and yet we have taken these disasters like fire. Fire is a catastrophe. Look what it does to a forest. Wipes it out. And we've taken it and made it a basic part of our way of life. So our trick at this point, when we have Operation Decisive Storm, which is what the Saudis call their new operation in Yemen, and a joint Arab military force has been declared. Why? Because the Saudis and the Gulf states are scared to death of Iran and the new nuclear deal that we are in the process of signing with Iran. But the big difference there is that we are doom riders. It is amazing the way that we have conquered doom. In the last 350 years, since 1650 AD, we have decreased the violent deaths in this world by a factor of 10. If you've been born in 1650, your odds of dying a violent death at the hands of another human being in war or in city violence were 10 times what they are today. That is an incredible ability to take catastrophe and turn it into opportunity.
Yet it doesn't seem that way, Howard, because of what? Social networking?
Because we focus on the negatives. And why do we focus on the negatives? Because it's our job to focus on the negatives. The only way to solve the negatives is to focus on them. Our insecurities are our greatest gift. So are our negative headlines. Right now, this intense discussion that's going on around the Iranian nuclear deal will hopefully make it better. And without that kind of discussion, nothing will make it better. So we have developed ways to take discussion, and instead of solving disputes by stabbing each other to death, we solve them with words and in the process come up with new solutions. For example, in 2011, there was a massive tsunami in Japan, a huge disaster. 3 days ago in Japan, there was a UN-led conference on disaster, and over 100 new products were shown off by the Japanese to deal with disaster.
They're back again. Thanks, Howard. Appreciate it. Daniel Craig has had surgery to repair a knee injury sustained while filming scenes for the new James Bond film. He had a minor procedure done in New York during a break in production over Easter. Furious 7 breaking all kinds of records over the weekend. So far, $143 to $145 million. Get this. You need to recover from a workout? They recommend use fast food. They say it's just as effective as supplements. What? Well, one guy who won't believe it is Dr. Joel Wallach, and he's next with us from criticalhealthnews.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. As I was mentioning, there was a study that just came out that said, look, you want to recover just as fast from a workout? Eat fast food instead of supplements. That's bizarre. I've never heard that before. I don't think I'd eat fast foods, that's for sure. Stay away from them as much as I can. Dr. Joel Wallach, his research has resulted in the publication of more than 70 peer-reviewed and refereed journaled articles in the field of nutrition and pharmaceutical research as well. He is part of criticalhealthnews.com, which you hear so much about on this program. And here he is. Happy Easter, Joel. Thanks for sharing your Easter with us.
Well, thank you so much, George, for your hospitality and all the great things you do for America.
You know, this study, I'm going to talk to you about all kinds of things with supplements tonight, Joel, but I can't believe it. I mean, we're told don't eat a lot of fast foods, don't do this, don't do that. And now here's a study done by one person at a University of Montana who says that it looks like people who worked out recovered just as fast. I'm a little leery about that. What about you?
Well, you have to appreciate, George, that over the thousands of years since the days of the pharaohs and the Egyptian physicians, 5, 6, 7, 8,000 years ago, every century there's been thousands of failed medical theories, and that includes the 20th and 21st century. And of course, medical doctors, one of their greatest theories is, just eat well and get everything you need. Well, of course, you may remember that Marlon Perkins called me out of Africa, and I did a big study with him, Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, combined with St. Louis Zoo and the Shaw's Botanical Gardens and Barnes Hospital. In a 10-year period, I did over 20,000 autopsies on study, George. It was 17,000 some change of over 454 species of zoo animals and 3,000 humans, 20 million chemistries, 20 million slides of special stains. And the bottom line of the study, in a 1,200-page book that's now in the Smithsonian Institute as a national treasure, was that every animal and every human being that dies of what we would call natural causes dies of a nutritional deficiency, not genetics and not pollution. They were looking for pollution, and of course, it was a failed theory. Well, just last month, February, the Journal of the American College of Nutrition, which is sort of the equivalent, a medical journal, the equivalent of the Journal of the American Medical Association, the first lead article said, well, discussion's over, we do need to supplement. 40% of Americans are deficient in 4 minerals and 3 vitamins. Well, of course, they didn't talk about the 90. If they'd have talked about the 90, everybody's deficient except those on the 90 for Life program. Now, here comes the bottom line. When you're deficient, you're going to wind up with all these diseases that doctors think of are being genetic.
And you feel it, too, right away, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, what they said, going on in that article, George, they said to flourish because the minimum daily requirements, this is a big thing about the article, they said the minimum daily requirements are numbers were picked, maybe 100 years ago, and they were just meant to get you just to survive, just to sit there, do nothing, and survive. Didn't say how long, but just to survive. Well, they said to flourish, human beings need 2,500 times the minimum daily requirement. 2,500 times the minimum daily requirement, and that is the equivalent to the Journal of the American Medical Association for Nutrition, the Journal of the American College of Nutrition, last month.
When people are supplementing, how long does it take for those nutrients to get into their system?
Well, there are several things involved here. Number one is the environment in your stomach, the environment in your intestines. And that old adage, George, you are what you eat, is absolutely positively not true. You are what you absorb. If you don't have enough stomach acid, you're not going to absorb B12, you're not going to absorb minerals, you're not going to digest proteins and amino acids. If you have a gluten intolerance, which 80% of Americans do, and they're eating wheat every day or barley or rye or oats every day, you lose 85% of your absorptive capacity of your intestine. You can be absorbing, you can be supplementing as much as you want, you can be eating as much as you want, but if you're only absorbing 15%, you're going to have a problem. Now, to answer your last question, if you're absorbing 100%, if you're, you totally have gluten-free diet and you're not having any gluten digestion problems, you will see results within 24 hours. Certainly within 2 weeks, you're going to be totally different. For instance, if you have iron deficiency anemia, George, and you have perfect stomach acid, you have perfect absorption in your intestines, you will notice a difference in 3 days because your bone marrow will take that iron and turn it into hemoglobin very quickly. Now, doctors want to give you a bone marrow transplant. There's no law requiring them to cure you when there's a cure available. And so doctors always go for the treatment rather than the cure. And so they don't want you to be cured with nutrition. They want to treat you with pharmaceuticals because if they cure you with nutrition, they're going to make $300. If they treat you 25 years with pharmaceuticals, they make $750,000. So they do not want to cure you.
What do you think of stem cells, Doc?
Well, stem cells are part of your immune system and part of your maintenance system, and they require all 90 essential nutrients to work in an optimal way to support and promote maintenance repair. We have many, many products in the Youngevity 90 for Life program that support the body's ability to manufacture stem cells, to stimulate stem cells to do their thing. You take the 90 essential nutrients, some of the antioxidants, these things stimulate stem cells. Your genes, your DNA, your RNA, your telomeres, little end caps on your chromosomes, cannot function. They can't even work in stem cells. Your stem cells won't be efficient if you don't have these nutrients. You have potential. Your stem cells have potential to rebuild your cartilage in your bones, rebuild your liver, mm-hmm. rebuild your heart, rebuild your brain, rebuild the retina of your eye. But it requires all 90 essential nutrients, optimal amounts, for your genes, your DNA, your RNA, your telomeres to function properly and give you maximum benefit, maximize your genetic potential.
Doc, when somebody comes down with cancer, what is happening to them? I mean, I know the cells have gone crazy. They're mutating. But what happens? How does somebody eventually die of cancer? Does it shut down the organs? What happens to the person?
Okay, well, you're getting very close to the exact answer to your own question. Basically, cancer is a self-induced disease. It's something that you do to yourself. It's absolutely not genetic in any way, shape, or form.
Or they've done to us.
Well, somebody has done it to us, or
yeah.
we've done it to ourselves,
yes.
either directly or indirectly.
Okay,
for instance, there was a great study that came out in 1998 by the University of South Carolina. They looked at just how women cook their food. They said women will increase the risk of breast cancer by 462% if they eat their meat cooked well done. If they eat their meat cooked medium rare, they reduce the risk of breast cancer by 462%. So when you look at that, the extreme benefit and the extreme worst effect,
yeah.
that's a 900-fold difference just by the way they cook their food.
Yeah.
Then you throw in things like trans fatty acids, which are free radicals caused by eating oxidized oils, salad dressings, cooking oils, rancid peanut butter, that sort of thing. That's one of the things that Marlon Perkins had me do. This is a very interesting story. It's in my new book, Epigenetics. The first project Marlon Perkins gave me when I was on that big study, when they did the 20,000 autopsies, worldwide, just about every bear in zoos around the world died of liver cancer in their late 20s, early 30s. And in the wild, they lived to be 40, 50, 60 years old. And he wanted to know why all the bears were dying in zoos from liver cancer. Kind of a strange deal. Well, it turns out the bears are big guys, and it was very expensive to keep them. And most zoos around the world would have one bear. But the St. Louis Zoo had 25 bears. The Brookfield Zoo in Chicago had 25 bears. The New York Zoo has 25 bears. And they would do that economically by going to the bread thrift stores and buying for a nickel old moldy bread. They give it to the bears, and it turns out that these old moldy bread were infested with the mold called Aspergillus. And Aspergillus makes a toxin called aflatoxin, which causes liver cancer.
Huh.
So all these bears are being fed this moldy bread, causing liver cancer around the world because they go to meetings and everybody says, well, the cheap way to get, you know, keep bears is to feed them moldy bread. You get a nickel a loaf. Well, it turns out right now one of the biggest causes of liver cancer in the inner city is peanut butter jelly sandwiches because they have the free radicals from the oxidized oils and then the bad peanut butter.
Can you smell that, Joel? Can you smell bad peanut butter, for example?
Can you smell it? Oh, yeah. It smells old.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, the moldy bread that they're getting from thrift stores for nickel a loaf has the aflatoxins in it. And so between the trans fatty acids, heterocyclic amines, and acrylamides, which occur from oxidized oils, salad dressings, cooking oils, oils in the nuts, oils in the peanut butter, and then the aflatoxins in the bread, or in the inner cities, they have the highest rate of liver cancer, not because they're drinking alcohol or anything like that, but because they're eating moldy bread.
Jeez.
And eating oxidized oil from peanut butter.
That's an amazing story. Why isn't this on mainstream media?
Well, again, this is because the theory, the prevailing medical theory, is still that liver cancer is caused by genetics. All cancers are a genetic thing. And if you try to publish this in a medical journal, to get something published in a refereed medical journal, they would send your proposed paper to a group of people and they say, well, this doesn't fit the prevailing theory, so we can't publish it. And unfortunately, science moves forward one funeral at a time.
Yeah.
The prevailer, the holder of the prevailing theory, the guy who's an expert in misinformation, he will send you to your death and he will die gripping the theory that he's become the expert in. Rather than say, you know, we were wrong all these years, we've got to change our thinking, they will never do that.
All right, stay with us, Joel. Dr. Joel Wallach with us from criticalhealthnews.com. He does have a toll-free number if you want to call for information, and that is 1-855-888-3986. 949-RADIO, 1-855-949-7234, or criticalhealthnews.com. A lot of you are starting to call already. Next hour, we will take phone calls with Dr. Joel Wallach. I'll be back with him. Much more to talk with him about. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Joel Wallach from criticalhealthnews.com. Joel, so much controversy these days about what to do, what to take. How do they get the information they need in order to do the right thing?
Well, unfortunately, again, the medical system had the attitude that, look, just eat well, don't waste your money and time, don't take supplements, eat well, you're going to get everything you need. What do we get for that? Right now, our children are the first generation in America that will not live as long as the parents. 50% of Americans are going to be standing at a graveside bearing their children following this advice from the medical doctors. Remember, there's thousands of failed medical theories each century, and the worst theories of the 20th and 21st century was to just eat well, you're going to get everything you need. When you look at the top 20 longevity cultures around the world, according to the National Geographic, they have a couple of common threads. So number one, they're all third world cultures. They're not a single industrialized nation or first world country that's in the top 20 longevity cultures, according to the National Geographic. They're all third world cultures. They're illiterate. They have no roads, no automobiles, no utilities, no indoor plumbing or electricity. These people have no doctors, no emergency services, absolutely no private or government insurance, no hospitals, no clinics, yet they have 40 times 100 as we do. They have 100 per 250 of their population, according to National Geographic. We have one per 10,000, okay? And so what do these third world cultures have that we don't have? Well, I spent a lot of time analyzing that. Of course, that was part of my job in this big study back in the 1960s and 70s, which resulted in the book that's in the Smithsonian Institute. And basically what it shows is that nutritional minerals do not occur in a uniform blank around the crust of the earth. They occur, George, in veins like chocolate and chocolate ice cream. And by dumb luck, these long-lived cultures live in places that have all the essential minerals in them.
They found them accidentally in most cases, didn't they?
Yeah, they don't even know they found them. I mean, there's lots of game there, plenty of water. And their ancestors thousands of years ago moved into those places long before they had the capacity to analyze the soil and see if there was value in it. But it was just a lush place, and their ancestors moved in, and they flourished. And when you look at the longest-lived culture in the Western Hemisphere, the Nicoyans, which are a peninsula in the Pacific coast of Costa Rica and Central America, they have 40 times 100 as we do. And there was a May 2013 cover article in National Geographic. Had a little two-year-old girl from Costa Rica that said she will live to be 120. And most of their children do live beyond 100, not because they have better doctors, not because they have better medications, not because they have better hospitals, but just by dumb luck, their ancestors moved into a place that has all 60 essential minerals in it. And so we can do these things ourselves. We can supplement with these. There's not enough space in the Nicoyan Peninsula in Costa Rica for the whole world to move in there. But we can, in our own homes right here in America, supplement with all 90 essential nutrients, particularly with the rare earths, things like ytterbium, yttrium, samarium, neodymium, praseodymium. And it's shown very clearly in nutritional studies with laboratory animals, George, that we can double the lifespans by supplementing with these rare earths. And, of course, this is one of the things we are very, very careful to do in the 90 for Life program. And we're so very proud of this that we have all six of the well-studied rare earths. And this is what makes us live longer and healthier.
I've known some people, Joel, they've eaten clay.
Yeah.
It's like liquid clay or something. What is that?
Well, you can get liquid clay, but it's kind of dangerous to eat liquid clay every day. It's a great detox. If you eat something that's poisonous, the clay will suck that out of you. But clay will also suck out the good nutrients.
Ah.
Clay is very useful if you put it into your garden. The plants will take it up, eat the plants, and you can safely eat the minerals in that fashion. The beauty of what we do, George, is that we take an ancient compost pile that has 78 minerals in it, including all 60 essential minerals in optimal amounts, and it's from plants as opposed to clay. The plants have already digested the clay into something safe and useful, and this is the core of everything that I've been doing for 36 years, and that's what makes what I do different. This is from a compost pile. We have access to 100 cubic miles of this stuff. Nobody else has access to it. And it has all these 60 essential minerals, and this is what makes the difference.
I did an experiment since the last time we talked, Joel, on myself. Okay. And what I did is stayed on my supplement program that I've always been on for a week, and then I went off it for a week, which I never do, but I wanted to see what would happen. And I could actually feel a difference, and not for the better when I went off it. I mean, in only a week, I didn't have as much energy as I normally had. Something was off. I could feel that something was off. Was that because of me just stopping?
Yes, because you're giving yourself nutritional deficiencies. And here's the deal. Again, to meet your genetic potential for longevity and for health and fending off disease and energy and strength and speed and intelligence, every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every week of every month of every year, your, again, genes, DNA, RNA, and telomeres need all 90 essential nutrients in optimal amounts to function. The equivalent to what you did was to say, you know, I'm not going to put 6 quarts of oil in my car anymore. It's too expensive, too problematic, too much trouble. I'm going to eat 6 quarts of Texas dirt because there's bound to be some oil in that Texas dirt. That's how stupid it is not to supplement. We're supposed to be at the top end.
It was a good test because when I went back on it, you know, about 3 or 4 days later, I started feeling myself again.
Yes. Well, it was a good experiment, and you're fortunate that you survived. Many people do such a thing, and they don't survive.
You're kidding me. Was that dangerous?
It can be very dangerous because the reason why these 90 essential nutrients are called essential nutrients, George, is that we can't make them. We must consume them every day. And if you don't consume them, you're going to get diseases, and, of course, some mineral deficiencies, for instance, like calcium deficiency, causes 147 different diseases. And many of these diseases are fatal. And so you have to be really, really careful about consciously giving yourself...
I should have called you first before I did this.
Yeah.
Jeez. I didn't know that it was dangerous
to
stop.
Yeah, it could be very dangerous.
Okay. Well, thank God I got something probably in the food during the week.
Well, maybe no, you had enough reserves because you've been taking supplements for years.
Yeah.
And so you had enough stored in you to kind of get you through that two-week period. Now, if you'd have gone, say, a year without supplementing, you'd have burned up all the stuff you'd stored in your body, then you'd really be in trouble.
A friend of mine called me a couple days ago and said that he's got gallstones and he's got an enlarged prostate. And I said, well, you need to do what your doctor says, of course, but you need to supplement. You need to go on certain things. And, you know, I've learned enough. I told him saw palmetto for the prostate. I didn't know what to tell him about the gallstones. But what's a guy like that do, Joel?
Well, George, when you have gallstones, the doctors want to blame your gallbladder, and they want to surgically remove your gallbladder. But when you have gallstones, they're actually made in your liver, and they're almost 100% cholesterol. And this is because your liver isn't getting what it needs to be happy. To function properly, do the 50,000 reactions it does every day, 50,000 chemical and enzymatic and hormonal reactions in your liver every day, and it requires an enormous amount of nutrition. I'm not talking about calories and protein. I'm talking about the 90 essential nutrients. If you're missing anything, it can't process things well, and the cholesterol precipitates into these BB-sized beads we call gallstones. The doctors want to take your gallbladder out. Well, the real problem is in the liver. And so we have a program where you take all 90 essential nutrients, you give yourself some extra things. We call it the secret sauce for the liver, and it has extra of the nutrients that make the liver happy, and it'll stop making gallstones. And actually, we have a digestive enzyme we call the gallbladder in a bottle because it does have bile in it, which will dissolve the gallstones and get rid of them without surgery. And so we can support the liver's ability to maintain itself, repair itself, by giving the liver everything it loves to have to maintain and repair itself, which is the 90 essential nutrients. There's about a dozen nutrients that are specifically necessary for the liver to really maintain and repair itself, and so we have the secret sauce for the liver.
Would you say surgery should be the last resort?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, most cases, 99.9% of the time, you really don't need surgery if you do these things. Obviously, you have to cut back on things that cause damage to the liver, fried foods, processed meats, alcohol, that sort of stuff, and let the liver recover. And then there's nothing wrong with a glass of wine or, you know, a shot of whiskey once in a while and that kind of stuff. There's no problems with that as long as you're giving your liver everything it likes. And so we have to be conscious. Again, the mistake we've made is that we've listened to doctors and they say, look, just eat well, you get everything you need. It's impossible, George, because plants only need 3 minerals. We need 60. And if, you can't tell by looking at a carrot whether it has 3 in it, 15, 45, or 60.
No, you don't know. You don't know.
You don't know. And so unless you're going to, you're prepared to spend $2,500 to do an analysis on each meal, you better be supplementing with the 90 essential nutrients. And whatever you get in your food will be value added. And that's what we do for the livestock industry. You know, I'm a veterinarian as well as a primary care physician, naturopathic physician, licensed in California and Oregon. And I can tell you that in modern times, we have to supplement, and because we very specifically shut off our supply of nutritional minerals at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882. We know the exact moment when it happened. It was in every newspaper in the world the next day because we had the telegraph back then, and news reports were going out, and every newspaper in the world picked it up. It's kind of crazy. We've known it since 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street in New York City. Thomas Edison pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant. Within 10 years, every industrialized nation, including the United States, George, converted from wood as a universal fuel to electricity. And there's no more wood ashes left in our homes every day when we use electricity to fuel our home. When we were burning wood, we put the wood ashes, which are really plant minerals, into the gardens. The plants would take them up. And if you live in a place that had 45, 50, 60, 70 minerals, you did well and you flourished. If you live in a place that had 3 or 5 or 15 or 20 minerals,
you didn't.
You might have lived to be 45 or 50 instead of 75 to 100.
Is that why in the ancient days, you know, you hear people like Socrates, until they killed him, you know, was pretty old. Yet a lot of people, the natural birth longevity rate was, you know, in your 40s. If you lived in your 40s, that was a long time. But if people got to their 80s, they were doing something right.
Yeah, and of course, they were unwittingly doing something right because where they lived, there were more minerals in the soils. And again, these top 20 longevity cultures, according to the National Geographic, not me, I took their figures, in every case, they have, again, places where, and this is by actual analyses of the soil by the universities in the countries these cultures are in. It's not the entire culture that lives a long time. It's little subcultures, little isolated mini environments on the slope of a mountain, in a valley, in a river valley. They do very, very well. And I found it kind of interesting that they would supplement with what they called glacial milk. There's water bubbling out underneath glaciers as the glaciers grind up the rocks, loaded with rock dust. And it looks like milk coming out, glacial milk. And if you read the Bible, I mean, I read the Bible almost every night because I'm in a hotel, you know, 300 days out of every year. And so it's easy reading.
You travel a lot, maybe too much, George.
Lot.
Jeez.
I'm giving 400 lectures this year, George.
Wow.
But the Bible talks about the ideal place to live for health and longevity is the land of milk and honey. And they weren't talking about milk from a milk cow. They were talking about the milk coming out from underneath the ground, underneath these glaciers, glacial milk. And then honey, of course, bees love minerals. So where there's lots of minerals in the soil, there's lots of minerals in the flowers, and bees will flourish and there'll be lots of honey. So wherever there is these glacial milks, this white water coming out from underneath the glaciers, all these ancient cultures would irrigate with that. The plants would take up these minerals. The flowers would have plenty of minerals in the pollen. The bees would flourish, lots of honey. And so we know exactly why people lived longer in the land of milk and honey, because they were getting the minerals.
Interesting. Yet they probably didn't know what they were doing, or did they?
They did not know.
They did not know.
They did know that when they lived there, they did well, but they didn't know why.
They didn't have
the analyses yet.
How come with shamans, Joel, you know, for like medicinal purposes, they would use certain plants so they understood that, for example, if you needed to fight off an infection, you used something, or like aspirin is the derivative of the willow bark. They knew that that would, you know, you would chew on the bark and the leaves. How did they know that?
Well, it was observation. If you go back to infectious disease in the days of the great plagues and epidemics and things that wiped out millions of people, the people who did not die during the infections were the ones who were perfume makers. The physicians died. Politicians died, generals died, soldiers died, average people died, merchants died, but the people who made perfumes didn't die during epidemics. That's where our aromatherapy oils came from.
Mm-hmm.
They would take these extracts from flowers, these very scented oils, even things like garlic, which is very scented, right? And even people who are making vinegar survived these epidemics in China. And so they learned that vinegar and garlic and also things like the aromatherapy oils, eucalyptus, tea tree oil, these sorts of things, will protect you from infection. So I wear a little necklace around my neck with a little jar, holds about a milliliter of these oils. When I go on airplanes so much, I put a few drops of these oils on the seat in front of me, and everybody comes running around, what's that smell? What's that smell? And, I mean, think about it. I have not been sick in 68 years.
That is
amazing.
I
have not been to a doctor in 68 years. I've never been on a prescription medication. I've never had any surgery. My pulse is 36. My resting pulse is 36. My blood pressure is 90 over 60.
90 over 60?
68 years.
90 over 60, that's it?
90 over 60, yeah.
Gosh.
It's been that way since I was 18 years old.
I've won 20 over 70. That's pretty good.
Well, that's very good. But think about it. A 15,000-pound elephant, their pulse is 30. And so a hummingbird's pulse is 210.
Do you work out at all or anything like that?
Oh, no, sir. The only thing I do is carry my suitcases. I have three suitcases that weigh 70 pounds each, and I have two briefcases that are 40 pounds each with all my computers.
That's your workout.
That's my workout. And I can run from the extreme end of one concourse in the airport to the extreme end of another one, and carrying those 250-pound briefcases, running, and, George, I never get breathless. So I know that's my stress test. I know that I do not have any blockages in my coronary arteries because I don't get breathless.
That's a good point, too. When you do get winded, that means there's something going on, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Interesting take. Joel Wallach with us, criticalhealthnews.com. We're going to take phone calls next hour with Joel. So if you have a question about yourself, I come from a school, Joel, where if you don't take care of your health, nothing else matters because you can't protect the people you care about. If you check out early, you've wasted something.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, you take somebody like Steve Jobs. He died at 56, a billionaire.
A billionaire.
The brightest guys in the 20th century. He died at 56 because he made a wrong decision.
He did make a wrong decision.
Yes, he did. He chose poorly. He believed the vegans and said, look, I'm going to protect the earth. I'm not going to eat meat. I'm just going to eat plants. I'm going to hire the top vegan chef. And the vegan chef cooked everything for him in extra, 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 virgin, 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 virgin olive oil, and killed him as sure as they shot him in the head.
He should have supplemented.
He should have supplemented. He was an unsupplemented vegan, and they killed him at age 56.
Gosh. How many people really understand this and how to take care of themselves?
Unfortunately, George, that's a very pertinent question. Certainly the medical system does not. And the average lifespan of medical doctors is 56. That's where I came up with the idea of the term dead doctors don't lie. Because if they knew everything that they should know about health, why do we have 100 out of 10,000 and their average lifespan is 56? Their average lifespan should be well beyond 100 if they really knew everything about health and they were practicing what they knew or practicing what they preached. And so they're a very, very bad example. If you had a mechanic whose car only went 20,000 miles before it burned up, you wouldn't go to that mechanic.
Never.
So why do people go to medical doctors whose average lifespan is 56? It doesn't make sense to me.
See, I like a doctor. To me, there's nothing wrong with modern medicine, but I like a doctor who understands holistic and supplements and tries to help you. That's my kind of doctor. How about you?
Well, yeah, let's say there's a surgeon. My wife is a microsurgeon. She's a very, very good microsurgeon. What makes her different is she supplements her patients along with doing the surgery.
Yeah.
You can do the most perfect surgery in the world, but if you don't supplement that patient, they don't have the raw materials for their body to repair itself and to support repair after the surgery.
That's a good point. Joel, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Let me give you his toll-free number one more time. You can write it down. It's 1-855-949-RADIO. Just remember that, 1-855-949-7234, or his website, criticalhealthnews.com. And when you do go there, make sure you look at the videos when you have some time about all the various other aspects. Dr. Joel Wallach with us, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.